And with the familiar tones of AC/DC, you and I begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, August 17th. We come to you coast to coast, from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches to the sticks, every single day on WrestlingObserver.com, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, all of our over-the-air affiliates, AM and FM. Kids, if you don't know what that means, ask your parents. Apps like iHeart and TuneIn. Everywhere else you get a signal in this world, you can hear my voice. I'm very thankful for that. On this Sunday, special shout out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service each and every day. Once again, second straight week, a two-hour show. If you're listening on Sports Byline and all of those affiliates I was talking about, 2 hours, ad-free edition for those on WrestlingObserver.com, of course. I'm going to be with you. We have a lot to talk about. Another busy weekend in wrestling. We're going to talk about, of course, all the happenings in Mexico over the weekend. Triple Mania, which I watched, my first Triple A show I checked out last night. Gave my thoughts on that. Well, I think it's going to be potentially pretty good for WWE. I'm going to lead off with a revelation. I don't like to admit I'm wrong. It's what my wife always says. But I was wrong. I have been wrong over the past couple of years. I was convinced that there was not a pro wrestling war. This week, I finally came around. Virginia, there's a wrestling war after all. And I'm going to talk about it on this week's show. I'm going to talk about the UFC ESPN deal, not AEW, but also how AEW is potentially a big winner in that deal. I'm going to talk a lot about things I think. Can't even get my own thing right. Chatting about that. All kinds of other stuff as well. Karrion Kross, Forbidden Door, all kinds of stuff. Great episode, packed episode. 2 hours of Wrestling Observer Live. We're about to get things going. Come right back after the break, and we'll get it started with my admission that I'm wrong. First time ever, Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason, coming right back after this. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live, my name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, August 17th. Thank you for joining me. Let's get into 2 hours of pro wrestling talk, shall we? So, again, as I left the show, I don't like admitting when I'm wrong. So much so, I have to clear my throat. It's an involuntary reaction, you know what I mean? It doesn't happen that often. But yeah, I'm wrong. There is a wrestling war. I don't know why, for the longest time, it was just hard for me to admit. And I think part of that was looking at from the outside, looking at it and between WWE and AEW and that. To me, you know, I am, as I've mentioned, 47, spry 47. And I've seen, quote unquote, wrestling wars before. The biggest one, of course, in my lifetime was WWE versus WCW. And we all know what happened there. WWE essentially took over the business, buying WCW, eventually bought the ECW trademarks and IP and that whole company and their library. They beat everybody, right? So we saw that played out, and part of that was them going head-to-head. That's a big thing with kind of how I defined a wrestling war, was them going head-to-head. You had to pick one or the other in that moment. And I lived through that. I was in college, and then obviously after college. But in college, for the most part, we would watch Raw was the hotter show with younger, my demo at the time, far out of that now. But you know what I mean? We would watch Raw because even my, and I was big in wrestling before this, but my friends weren't. But there's something that it just hit for all the reasons that you can probably imagine, right? And then I would tape on a VHS tape, my TV VCR combo. I would tape Nitro and I would watch that afterward and stay up pretty late. And that's how I would get my Monday night viewing. But there was a head-to-head. You had to pick one or the other. AEW versus WWE really haven't had that. Obviously with NXT, the initial Wednesday night war, everyone wants a war. So I kind of like allergic to that because everyone wants a catchphrase. Everyone wants to have, this is going to be our quote unquote Monday night war. We need competition. Everyone wants their thing. And for a while, that's kind of what I thought. I'm like, well, you know, we had that thing on Wednesdays, but it was NXT. They eventually moved, and then there was really no head-to-head competition. Now, is there a talent war? I certainly came around on that. Talent war for sure, and that's good because that means another company has money. more wrestlers get paid and talent gets paid. And that's good for everybody. Even those people who don't care about those things, it is good when more people are making good money, right? Especially entertainers and ones that, you know, it's just a good thing in pro wrestling, to me anyway. But to me, it was just not a war because I am on all these TKO quarterly calls. I do my AEW quarterly, quote-unquote, investor calls with Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics, and we talk about AEW business, you know, the limited scope that we can. But you look at the financials, and WWE is just a powerhouse. TKO, they're global partners, huge powerhouse. They make hand over fist, and to me, it was always like, if they really wanted to put their thumb down, they could crush AEW if they want to. If they wanted to go head-to-head and just start kind of taking away some things and really pushing this main roster thing, they certainly could do that. That was kind of always my assertion, but they had them. Both companies existed. There was some chatter back and forth. You know, I think it's been less with Tony Khan in recent years as compared to, say, the first few years of AEW. And I think that's obviously that caused some diversity with the tribalists wrestling mentality so many have on social media. But this past week certainly showed me that there is indeed a wrestling war in WWE that wants AEW eradicated. For why? I think the assertion we've talked about here and other podcasts have as well, that they would love them to not exist so they can control the market, aka salaries and so on. They control the market by all leaps and bounds, and I think what they've been doing with AAA, potentially with TNA, but especially with AAA, I expect something to happen probably in Japan maybe at some point soon. Maybe they buy NOAH, who knows? But what I expect is they are not going to let another competitor get in the door while also skirting around the antitrust regulations, which they don't obviously have to worry about as long as President Trump is in office, because they're friends and I think they're safe. But this is the run they're going to try to do it this next couple of years while they can. But this past week, with the not the official announcement, but certainly no denial that they are going to do a PLE against AEW All Out in September, and that they are also going to do John Cena's last match. It looks like they're going to go head-to-head with World's End. So it's not just throwing NXT at AEW like they have so many times in the past, with recently with Great American Bash in July at All In, and that they're doing actually next weekend having Heatwave air after Forbidden Door and try to win the night or just take away any bit of attention, what have you. It's real. They're putting the main roster out. They're putting what sounds like, and again, there's been no denials, John Cena and Brock Lesnar against All Out in September. John Cena's final match in December against World's End. They're making fans pick. Now, some people may say, oh, look, two different audiences. One is not wrestling and one is. One is sports entertainment, the other isn't. You've heard the debates on either side for years and years. But it's still making fans choose, because it's hard. I know it might be hard to believe. A lot of wrestling fans aren't floating around on social and you don't hear from them. And they may be thinking, oh, I like both. It's possible. I like WWE and WCW back in the day. I preferred WWE, but it didn't mean I didn't enjoy what I was seeing on WCW. And I never thought, I want one to go away, like people now, so performative. But it's true. Some people would love the fact that AEW went away. And I think if it did, the content creation industry and social media and so on would, I think they'd be a little bit upset, because it's the only thing really kind of keeping them relevant. But that's where we're at now. We have WWE trying to take some dents and so on. Dave Meltzer seems to think that they do not want AEW to get this next big TV rights deal, which will be up in, I believe, 2 years. There's renewal. That's obviously big, and so much can happen. I mean, look, in the past couple weeks, let's look at what's happened with ESPN taking on WWE, and then also with Paramount Plus, which we'll talk about, I believe, next segment. I'll talk about that. Getting UFC rights. Everything changes quickly. So can I predict it happen in 2 years? Definitely not. Not especially in this era. Who knows what could happen? But I do know that WWE, again, they want everything again. and they are trying to put the squeeze in AEW. Now, why are they doing this? We mentioned about the salaries and so on, but to me, why should they care if AEW exists? Why ultimately, from a competitive standpoint, look, I mean, as I mentioned, this company makes so much money. We all know this. I don't have to go through the financial documents to tell you that. They have everything you'd want. They have the nostalgia, the history, which is a huge part of their success. They have the talent, you know, arguably majority of the top talent when it comes to, you know, mainstream notoriety and so on and so forth. No slander to AEW. It's just kind of reality of how things go. They have so much IP. They have so much money. And they have a lot of pop culture goodwill now because they've leaned into influencer culture, which they're doing with AAA, which we'll talk about later on the show. But they have it all. Why do they care if AEW exists? So what if you have to pay a little bit more money? They just signed a massive deal with ESPN, and they're going to sign other big deals as well. They have one going on with Netflix. They have, obviously, NBC Universal. They're good, but they want to be left alone at the top of the mountain. It's not good for the business if they do. But, yeah, there's definitely a wrestling war, and one that I don't think they need to fight. They've already kind of won in a lot of ways. And to me, if they just kind of play it out, maybe they'll win more and so on and so forth. But, you know, we'll come back after the break and we'll talk a little about a few final thoughts about that. How AAA is playing into this whole thing. Got some more things that I think I know I think. And UFC TV deal. Lots more coming ahead in 2-hour episode of Wrestling Observer Live. Josh Nason coming right back after this. Wrestling Observer Live for Sunday, August 17th. My name is Josh Nason, back with you. Let's continue with couple leftover thoughts from the wrestling war aspect. So where does AEW, like, what do they want out of this? They are putting on a consistently, I'd say, good product, good to great at times. Their pay-per-views are great. Dynamite, for the most part, very entertaining. Collision is, in terms of relevancy, kind of up and down, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on the show. Good quality wrestling, but again, the why do I care factor is kind of a big thing, I think, with especially other promotions and so much wrestling on AAA last night. Chat about that. So AEW in this whole thing, they're trying to, you know, they're just trying to survive and put on good company. Will they get to this next TV deal, and how much will they get? It's still way too early to speculate on that. But if they do get this new TV deal, essentially, are they, I want to say cancel proof, but are they, can their company survive? How, what is the, where are the lengths WWE is willing to go to squash them? And AAA, and I should say TNA rather, seems to be getting in this mix as well. So there was some news with TNA this past week, and has not been denied by anyone, that the TNA is looking, they've been looking for this TV rights deal for a while. They're partners with WWE, multi-year deal. And we learned from Dave Meltzer that WWE has the right to buy TNA for a certain amount of time. I don't know what the price is. And they have the right of first refusal if somebody comes along and offers a package for TNA. And that Dave was saying that essentially that anyone that buys a company has to play ball with WWE. Kind of sounds like a monopoly to me. If you're getting all these pieces in place and another separate company can't sell without checking in, and I'm sure that's not the first time in history that's happened, but the they have to be, you know, work with WWE. I don't, and you know, they want, WWE wants TNA as the number two company. Well, if you want, do you want your potentially next competitor to be friendly? I can understand that, but that also does sound kind of antitrusty. I don't know, kind of weird. But one of the aspects that was very interesting was that they want, it potentially looks like NXT, or sorry, TNA, got all these companies, TNA, which basically is, you know, for all intents and purposes, like NXT these days, they are looking to be on a competitive network, a WWE partner network to compete with AEW, like the CW, A&E was mentioned, but I don't think anyone really thinks that's a great fit, but potentially the CW, and to run Wednesdays head-to-head with Dynamite. So then there's that aspect as well. Now, on the surface, It is hard for me to believe, even with the advancements that TNA has made, even with the alignment with NXT and so on, it is hard for me to believe that that would be an AEW killer. Now, if WWE sent main roster talent there, it would potentially take a little cut into it. Now, granted, it'd be on network TV. That helps, but wouldn't it be really weird and blatant for WWE to send main roster talent to TNA in order to try to kill off AEW? Seems kind of desperate. Just do it yourself. Put on your own show on Wednesdays and go head to head. If you didn't, you didn't do it with NXT, or just move NXT if you really want to do it, move them to Wednesdays. It just seems like there's all these little pieces that they're trying to play instead of just going direct. Now, they are going direct with some of the PLEs. They can do that. But why not just move one of your own assets? Is there fear of losing? What happens if we do? And also this perception out there that if everyone likes to root for an underdog. Now, granted, the narrative always when people bring this about AEW is, well, they're owned by a billionaire. But I think we kind of get the idea. This company looking to survive, and it is better for the wrestling business if AEW survives. I think from the best aspects, which is the finances for more places for talent to work, behind the scenes people, all that. But then also for the content creation community, it's probably a lot better, as I mentioned in the first segment. So if you're sending TNA after after AEW, you've sent NXT after, and you're doing the main roster, certainly seems pretty direct of what they're trying to do. And yeah, I think you might create a bit of an underdog. It's hard to create an underdog with a billionaire owner, but there is a good segment of the population that's very anti-WWE and kind of seen this play out before, and they don't want to go back to doing it. And I'm very fascinated to see what happens in the next couple of years with this, as we all are. And we'll be talking about right here on this very show. Speaking of wars and money and TKO and all that stuff, let's talk about another big war chest that got built up this past week. I was on vacation. I was at, Jellystone Park in New Hampshire. So it's a campground, glamping, if you will. Was there with family and friends. And just kind of, doing some stuff in the morning, getting ready to kind of head out for the day and kind of do all the things that you do. I got a message saying, hey, can you get this story? I was like, what story? And I looked and, lo and behold, I believe it was on Monday, that the UFC, it might have been Tuesday, that the UFC has signed a deal with Paramount. Their TV deal, all done. After months and months and months of talking about this, speculating, is it going to be Netflix? Is it going to be ESPN? Split package? All the things. No, full kit and caboodle heading to Paramount Plus of all places, or Paramount rather, through David Ellison. Is a Skydance company just bought it, just cleared that in their first big splash. I guess they made one with this, the creators of South Park, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, to have that. And I think it was another $1 billion deal, but they made another one here. So yeah, 7 years, $1.1 billion a year, massive, I believe 1.1, massive, massive increase. And the era of pay-per-view, no matter what Dana White says, the era of pay-per-view, once this begins for UFC, is essentially dead. You could try to sell it, but it's going to be a hard thing to sell, I guess, once you've had all this. Imagine WWE trying to offer a one-off pay-per-view at this point, right? People be like, huh, what? Not paying for that. You're setting the market. So there's no coming back from this. And the era of pay-per-view, as we'll chat about in a bit, is really hurt. And I think there's going to be a narrative out there about AEW pay-per-views. But let's stick with this one. So starting in 2026, the whole move goes there. Potentially a couple winners. AEW, I think, is a huge winner in this. Why? At least for now. Because that means WBD was potentially talking about UFC rights. Who knows how interested they actually were in doing this. But now, AEW does not have to worry about moving Collision full time. There was some speculation that if, WBD got a fight night package, that they'd have to move Collision to Thursdays. Still might happen. Who knows? And now they don't have to worry about that. Now they are going to be going, as they have been, head to head with more, readily available UFC content than they had before, with the pay-per-views moving over and becoming free. And since you're going to have about, I think it was 42 fight nights, 42 total events, I believe was the deal. So you're still going to compete against that. But I think AEW is a big winner in the sense that WBD is not in the MMA business as of this point. Now, what happens if Paramount buys WBD? There was some speculation on that this week. That would certainly change a lot of things, right? I think from a UFC fan standpoint, a new start time could be a big positive, because there's going to have to be, because some of these shows are going to be airing on or simulcast on CBS. Now, CBS is a network, and they have cable news, or they have cable news. They have their 11 p.m. news, and they have certain time frames in which they have to hit. So if you start a show, you can't start a pay-per-view at 10 p.m. at night. It just doesn't work that way. Could you start after the news? I guess, but why would you even bother putting on CBS at that point? No, you're putting in a prime time right at 8 o'clock. I guess you could start at 7, but I'm going to guess 8 o'clock is their window for affiliates and so on to do syndicated programming at 7. So an 8 to 11 window to do a pay-per-view. That's a big plus for East Coast fans. And I think also with our friends that are in the UK and other places that have to watch pay-per-view starting in the middle of the night. Even last night, I was keeping up with the UFC pay-per-view, and I think it was around like 12:15. I was kind of catching up after my Triple Mania coverage and was watching that. It's like 12:30 and the main event is just ending. And it was kind of a boring main event, which is that kind of just that gut punch. I think people are going to be very happy to not have to worry about, to look at their bill, their credit card statement, and be like, wow, I just paid $75 or $6, whatever the price is now. And I came away with it like flat. Paramount Plus, that's, fans are a big winner because they have to pay a lot less money for this. I think the new start time, that's going to be potentially a new start time, definitely is for the pay-per-views. But I think overall, I think you're going to see some earlier times. Are there any losers in this? ESPN to an extent. I think UFC financially is a winner, but their coverage on ESPN without a doubt is going to dwindle. So that could be a loser. So, but yeah, they got their bag for the next 7 years. They don't have to worry about it. And again, the whole world could be upside down in 7 years. So really, who gives a crap about what happens almost a decade from now when it comes to media rights, right? Or have like one network at this point, one streaming service, probably Netflix will win it all. And Netflix also, yeah, it was kind of interesting. Netflix kind of just, they were in the mix, but didn't want the whole package. They wanted the pay-per-views, and TKO walked away, and away we go. When we come back, I'm going to talk about Triple Mania, how this fits into WWE ecosystem, and why potentially fans of the, not fans of the wrestling war, but fans of WWE could be happy, and fans of everyone else might be a little bit sad. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason coming right back after this. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live, Josh Nason. It is Sunday, August 17th. Let's keep going. This segment, we'll talk about AAA, Triple Mania last night. My thoughts as a first-time viewer, and also things I think I know I think. We'll talk about Ring of Honor. We'll get there. And we got more coming ahead. 2-hour show if you're listening on Sports Byline, iHeart, or TuneIn. So Triple Mania last night. So I have not done live coverage for our website in a long time. We have a lot of great writers that do all that for us. Or last night, could not get any takers for Triple Mania. There was just not a lot of availability last night. And so I said, well, you know what? I got some time. I start 9 p.m. start time. I'll do this. So last night, I watched Triple Mania 33, my first AAA show. And I've seen clips and so on and so forth. But this is my very first actual full show. So Triple Mania, they do this 3 times a year. And they have another one, I assume another one coming up this year. I don't know really kind of what their schedule is. But yeah, I wonder if that will continue going forward after WWE ownership. And if, maybe they just might leave it to have one and build it kind of like their WrestleMania, do the same thing. I will tell you, my overall thoughts was after 3 hours, available on YouTube, I think it was very smart to do, make this readily available, just start kind of getting this out there more, especially if you're going to, they're going to start pitching a TV deal. It was smart to kind of just start getting more and more people in the mix, right? And fans understanding this. and so on. This was it was so fascinating because it was, to me, WWE production from start to finish. The shots, the type of cameras they used, the entrances, everything, the intros, everything was very, very, very 100% WWE, which can be a good thing. People have complained about production issues they've had in the past, streaming issues when it comes to Triple Manias and other events. 0.0 issues with this. And I think that that's a benefit. It was a clean, professional broadcast from start to finish. No blips, no issues, no nothing. And that was good. Aside from one little thing I'll talk about in just a minute. But it was very, also felt authentic, what I assume is authentic to AAA fans and Mexican wrestling fans. They did the national anthem before the show. And the AAA executives, they had Triple H in the ring, Nick Khan, Shawn Michaels were there. The Undertaker was also there, but did not come out in the crowd, which I thought was, or in front of the people, which I thought that was very interesting. Why is the Undertaker there? I guess this role in creative might be a little bit more than we originally thought, or he may just want to hang out with Trips and HBK for the night. Who knows? So yeah, this was in Nick Khan. I think this is his first appearance on WB TV in terms of this form or fashion, which was I thought was interesting. The announce team was pretty good most of the night. Corey Graves, Conan, and JBL. And yeah, I thought, yeah, Conan was throwing in a few times. He legit made me laugh. He really stayed in character when it came to some of the long-term storylines, like his feud with, oh my God, what is the guy's name? It's driving me crazy. Dorian Roldan. Sorry, I'm sorry, getting used to this new group. But really, during that match with El Macias versus El Hijo de Wagner Jr., did Dr. Wagner Jr., apologize. He's a long time rung feud with the original Dr. Wagner Jr.'s father, who was there. And just, it was, I mean, I'm laughing right now. It was hilarious, but that was pretty good. But yeah, there was a lot of WWE talent on the show. There was some surprises with the Omos and Otis and so on. There's a brand new version of Taurus, which was really weird to watch as an AEW viewer to see, you know, the Beast Mortos, and now his old character, the character Black Taurus or Taurus, now differently. It looks strange. It looks like a ripoff. It's odd, but I guess that's just the culture. But yeah, we had Omos, and we had the plenty of comedy on the show. We had Omos and Microman, which you've seen the clips by now. If you're probably listening to this, if not, you can find those, which was pretty hilarious. We had, of course, the comedy match. I thought that was a lot of fun, which was Judgment Day versus Mr. Iguana Lolovice and Nino Hamburguesa. Hamburguesa. Yeah, I believe that's how you pronounce that. It was a pure comedy match, and was, again, that was a lot of fun. Between those guys, we had a Demonito puppet against Mr. Iguana. This was total WWE camp. I was totally here for this. There was a tag team title street fight, which I thought was kind of lame. I do love street fights and in bits and pieces, but I thought this one didn't really bring the boys to the yard, so to speak. We had this Conan being inducted into the AAA Hall of Fame by Rey Mysterio. The issue here was, it was all in Spanish, again, very authentic when it comes to the production and so on, and not going full English. And they did that, you know, pretty much throughout the night, the ring announcing and so on. It wasn't a split thing or anything like that. But you have Rey Mysterio talking, and then you have a translator talking. So essentially you have two people talking over each other, and you can't understand one, and you can not really, you're trying to focus on the other, but this other one's talking. So that'd be one note I had, is that if the goal is to bring in an increasingly bigger English speaking audience, you do have to find ways to make the production easy for them to take in. Now, some people may think, oh, why? Like, this is, it should be authentic, should be Mexico and it should be in Spanish and it's got to fit our heritage. I understand that. I think there's a way to do, how do you accomplish both? Because this was potentially a pretty good speech. It was just really hard to hear what he was saying. And it was, I found it difficult. I did think it funny. He was yelling at somebody in the crowd to sit down. Some guy that was, I guess, giving a crap or something like that. So that, I thought that was pretty funny. And then we had this the three-way women's title match, which I thought was an eh, with Flammer, Fabia Pacci, and also Natalya. And then we also had, let's see, who else? The four-way. This four-way was crazy. It was the Mega Championship, El Hijo del Vikingo, against Dominic Mysterio, El Grande Americano, and Dragon Lee in a four-way. I thought this was as good. One thing I loved is that the commentary team did not say a word during the entrances. They let all four guys come out, and you just let the moment kind of sink in and let the character sink in. I thought that was great. I loved that. And this was a dizzying sequence to go to the end. Tons of interference by WWE talent. You had LWO, Judgment Day, Americano's Mystery Goons were there as well. And then AJ Styles. This is a complete WWE main event. AJ Styles making his AAA, I don't know if his debut, or he made a surprise appearance. He and Styles clash on Dominic Mysterio, and they left. Vikingo took advantage, getting booed. I couldn't believe that. But I've heard this, you know, Vikingo getting booed repeatedly, hitting a 630 to get the pin. Successful title defense. It was chaotic, and I enjoyed every minute of it. So the bigger thoughts, really fun show. Will I become a regular AAA watcher? I don't know, but I thought like the Copa Berdal is their kind of version of it, a Royal Rumble. Did a great job in introducing, you know, 14 or so characters, some of which are in WWE, to American fans or WWE fans that may not be familiar with them, but at least kind of get them on the radar. La Parca, you know, Laredo Kid, who's been around forever, Abismo Negro Jr., Aerostar. Some of these talents, at least they'll kind of stick in their mind, like, oh yeah, I've seen them before. So I thought that was a big positive. And one of the things I think is very interesting, I think this is going to really work for WWE in so many different ways. And I think if you're a CMLL / AEW, I think maybe this is a little bit concerned. It just had a very easy to watch program, and the characters just seem to fit. WWE loves characters and moments and so on. You know, in terms of the in-ring, you know, that's hit or miss when it comes to WWE in terms of, but fans don't really care about that. And that's why I think this might work. Now, are they going to be willing to support? Now, this is kind of going back to the original discussion. Are they going to be willing to support a WWE, NXT, potentially TNA, and then also AAA? That's a lot to ask fans to do. But they're putting out a blueprint of, we can come to your country, we can be part of your country, we can own a company in your country, and we're not going to take all the things that made you away, but we're going to have a presence here, and we're going to have a place for people like Angel and Berto to work, a place for Almost to go, Otis to go. So they're always busy. Even if there's nothing on the main roster, there's always something that feels big that they can do that people are going to pop big for. And that's a pretty valuable asset to have. Now, AEW does have this a little bit with, obviously, the relationship with CMLL, MJF being there on Friday night, and that was a big thing building up to their anniversary show with a mask versus hair match. But you have WWE now with this presence, and how they intermingle all these groups is going to be fascinating as well. Because somebody's like, great, I love working in AAA, but you know, I'd love to get to the big roster. How does that happen? And how do you make people happy on all these different levels as well? You got to pay people, and you got to give them opportunity. And that opportunity is important. Now, this is, to me, they build this thing out. Conan cannot wait for them to do this, as he mentioned on commentary randomly. This is a big thing, and as they build this out, I think it's going to become more of a destination, more of a very interesting international property for them to have that they can then try to replicate somewhere else. And be like, look, we did this in Mexico. Now we can do this in Japan, which I think is probably on their eyes in their goals as well. But yeah, I think last night, I think it was a big hit for them. And I think this thing is really going to work. Now, I wonder from the classic AAA fans, how did this feel? Does this feel like a regular show? Is it too WWE? I don't know. I'm interested in hearing some of your thoughts. You can hit me up on Twitter at Josh Nason, Blue Sky at Josh Nason, or send me a good old-fashioned email, josh@wrestlingobserver.com. I did not get to my Ring of Honor stuff. Actually, I have a little bit more time here for now. I'll do this. But let's do Karrion Kross real quick. I'll get to Ring of Honor in an hour or two. I cannot imagine a story that I've been less interested in than Karrion Kross. And this whole, is it a work, is it not? Boy, I do not care about this at all. And I think part of it is just, I just don't see him as this, a top guy to be that cared about or talked about to this level. Everyone has an opinion if this is a work or not. I think one thing that is helping is I don't know how interested Tony Khan is in Karrion Kross, Killer Kross, whatever he's going to be called now, and Scarlett. He was interested at one point, if you remember, he was interested in bringing him in for one of the MJF matches during the, I believe it was Jericho, the Five Trials of Jericho, whatever that was called, and he was interested in bringing Karrion Kross and went to Big Bill instead. So I think there's some, it was some interest there. Is he interested now? I don't know. Karrion Kross saying he wants to eventually go back to WWE, or that was kind of, I can't remember what the exact quote was. That I can't imagine does well with it, with a Tony Khan, because you don't want people that just want to go back to their promotion and use you for a couple of years. But I just, boy, I just don't care. I just don't think he's, maybe he's a nice guy, or, but as far as, you know, he's been around forever. And all of a sudden this idea that he's some sort of, you know, Heyman saying he reminds him of Stone Cold Steve Austin in terms of his groundswell. I think it seems to be like a meme type thing. You know what I mean? Where people just are saying this because it's the cool thing to do, but I don't get a big groundswell if people really want Karrion Kross to be like a world champion or something like that. So we'll see how this plays out. I am of the opinion that he's going back to WWE, and this is just kind of all the ruse, and it's not going to look that great. If not, boy, it's going to make him look pretty bad in the end. Unless he signs at AEW, who knows? I could be completely wrong. But in terms of things I think I know, I think he's still WWE bound if he isn't already. And this whole thing is going to be a waste of time. Will not be a waste of time. It's coming right back after this break. More to come. Wrestling Observer Live. Back in a minute. Back with you. Final segment for hour one of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. Again, if you missed any of this show, you can listen to the full thing on WrestlingObserver.com ad-free. Cheap subscriptions there. You can go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe there. Just search for Wrestling Observer. $10 a month for either service. You get all the audio, Wrestling Observer Radio, all the Wrestling Observer Live. Of course, this show airs Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, Saturdays at 1 p.m. with Jim Valley. Brian Alvarez and Tom Lawler and Lance Storm handle the other shows. Brian also does a solo show, I think, on Thursdays. He's always like, I'm solo. I don't know what I'm going to talk about for an hour. My phone hasn't rang. My texts haven't blown up. Brian, I'm ready for you any single time. I asked for 2 hours, two straight weeks. Come on. Come on. You can also, of course, listen to this as you're listening to this on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern. But, of course, Wrestling Observer Live, Spotify, and Wrestling Observer Radio. Sorry, WrestlingObserver.com. Boy, I talk crap about Brian. Now I'm screwing up the ad read. But, yeah, you can check everything out on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Coming up in the second hour, got a lot to chat about. Some more things I think I know, I think. We're going to get to why I think Ring of Honor is kind of a mess. What is it? What does it want to be? We'll talk about that. Big E, his thoughts about him and his future. Again, Forbidden Door. Last week, Forbidden Door, I was not excited for this card at all. I was like, kind of felt forced and blah. This week, after this past week, rather, oh boy, I think this is going to be a banger of a card. A lot of fun. Was Hiroshi Tanahashi going out in his final match in London in a lights-out cage match on your bingo card for the year ahead? I think not. We'll talk about that and all kinds of other stuff as well. Hour two of Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Jason coming right back after this. Stick around. And with the familiar tones of AC/DC, once again, we begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Jason. It's hour two, Sunday, August 17th. We come to you coast to coast, from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches to those sticks every single day on WrestlingObserver.com. The Sports Byline Broadcast Network, all of our over-the-air affiliates, AM and FM. Holla if you hear me. iHeart, TuneIn, apps, everywhere you get a signal in this fine world, you can hear my voice. And I thank you greatly for that. I truly do. Special shout-out to those listening, of course, in the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service. Each and every day, as I mentioned, it is hour two. Yes, the second straight week, the second hour, two-hour show of WrestlingObserver.live. WrestlingObserver.live. Boy. That'd be a fun but that URL that people actually have. Anyway, Wrestling Observer Live, lots of chat about. We talked about the first hour, which you can listen to at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll work through that. How I came around. There is a wrestling war after all. I'm convinced. It's happening. I don't love it, but it's happening. I talked about the winners and losers out of the UFC TV deal with ESPN. Paramount leaving ESPN. So maybe a couple of winners and losers. Maybe we'll chat about that for a few minutes. We'll talk about some things that I know that I think of Ring of Honor, Big E, some other notes as well. And also do a full preview of Forbidden Door as we know it on this Sunday, a card that I am definitely think I'm looking forward to now. A lot more than I was last week. Maybe we'll chat a little TNA Emergence and where they're at. We'll talk about the schedule for the week ahead. And yeah, maybe some CMLLs, AEW Collision from last night as well. That'll tie into Forbidden Door. So we got a ton to chat about over this next hour, you and I do, including a John Cena quote I found interesting on Sunday morning. So stick around. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason coming right back right after this. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. Hour 2, Sunday, August 17th. Thank you for joining me once again. Let's talk about AEW from last night. So I did not see all of the show. I am very familiar with Happen, of course. The spoilers coming out on Thursday and the like, but I've seen a little bit of it. But due to Triple Mania, I did not see the whole thing. But let's chat about this real quick and how it leads into Forbidden Door. Really just one development from last night leading into Forbidden Door, and that being Nigel McGuinness. Yes, Nigel McGuinness, the former Ring of Honor World and Pure Champion. He's got a chance to add the IWGP World title to his trophy case and in front of his home country as he will challenge Zack Sabre Jr., one of my favorite wrestlers to watch when I do check out his work. He will challenge him at Forbidden Door for the title. Their first match ever against each other. So that's a lot of fun. McGuinness at 49 years old, looks great, physically looks great. So Nigel, it is crazy, man. Like he basically, his career was thought to be over back in what, 2011, I think it was. And so, yeah, December 2011 was his last match. And then he made a surprise return at All In 2024 in Wembley Stadium, again, from his countrymen and women. And that was a big surprise. Looked great in that. I thought he should have won that match. Remember, Christian Cage won that match and then led to this really bad Money in the Bank style kind of cash-in thing and just didn't work. And you see kind of AEW kind of moved away from that this year, talking about Forbidden Door with this year's Casino Gauntlets. So maybe that might be the marching orders going forward. So because then he faced Bryan Danielson, who was then the world champion. And so to me, he should have just won that match and then challenged Danielson like he was supposed to. Anyway, so again, he hadn't wrestled anywhere since 2011, returns at All In. Then he takes on Bryan Danielson and Lee Moriarty that year. And then he and Daniel Garcia lost to FDR. MA's Double or Nothing, and then he was added to this four-way technical spectacle with Lee Moriarty, Daniel Garcia, and Hechicero. And yeah, he picked up the win, and he will face Zack Sabre Jr. Daniel Garcia will be in his corner, which makes me think that there's something coming there. I think Daniel Garcia, I completely forgot about. I've talked about in this show before. He needs something. Something is just not working here, and I was hoping maybe it might be a switch to the Death Riders. But there, he needs something. He absolutely needs something. And perhaps it's interesting. I could see him turning on Nigel. But also, if Nigel is going to retire, I wonder, now that I think about this, I guess this depends on how long does Nigel want to do this. Does he want to just keep kind of wrestling on and off until he just doesn't feel like doing it anymore? You know, he still looks good. And if he wrestles, you know, 5-6 matches a year, is he interested in doing that? If not, does he want to have a swan song at perhaps Wembley Stadium next August for All In? That'd make a lot of sense. If so, and say that, you know, this Sunday in the this Sunday coming up in the O2, if he doesn't want that to be his finale, I could see Garcia turning on him, costing him the match, and then, you know, perhaps that leads to something down the road. But Daniel Garcia definitely needs something. But yeah, Nigel McGuinness at 49 years old. I never would have predicted this over a decade ago, and that's the thing. Retirements, you know, Sammy Callahan retiring on Friday night, TNA Emergence. Retirements, as we've talked about with wrestlers and fighters, are only as good as the next phone call and the next paycheck, unless something is definitely wrong. Do I expect Sammy Callahan's retirement to stick? No. Not because he's a bad person or a liar. I just think that's just the way this business works. Nigel McGuinness, we never thought we'd see him again. And lo and behold, look at him. He's still looking great and doing his thing in 2025 and probably in 2026 as well. So that was kind of the big development from last night. And let's see, that was basically about it. You know, Mina Shirakawa made her return after a long break from injury. She had already been announced to be taking on Athena at Death Before Dishonor with Ring of Honor. And that already been announced, but she made a return to aid Tony Storm as this angle with Tony Storm and Athena and Billy Starks and so on continues. And we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, other than that, you know, AEW Collision, again, a solid wrestling show for all intents and purposes, but just in terms of the must-see news and the must-see things out of last night, it really didn't fit. I think more people are interested in Finn Balor's new merchandise for Demonito, which has already hit WWE shop. How much is this item? I am curious about. Let's see. So if you, as I mentioned earlier, the Demonito, which is this puppet. Everyone's into puppets now. $100. Wow. $100 for Demonito on WWEshop.com. I don't know if you can buy La Yesca, which is the iguana, Mr. Iguana's little buddy. Oh my God, this is a hilarious write-up on our website. But yeah, so that's going on. But yeah, AEW had a... Okay, now, but let's kind of go into the Forbidden Door card, which I am very interested about, more interested than I was about Collision last night. So not a ton of changes since last week, right? We had Hangman Page defending the AEW title against MJF. That is new. So we knew that was going to happen, so that's a good headline. Is Mark Briscoe going to get involved in this? We'll see. We had Unified Champion Kazuchika Okada defending against Swerve Strickland. We talked about that before. That was announced. That should be good. Hangman versus MJF should be good as well. MJF is starting to get back to that level that I think he should be at in terms of a dangerous man and one of the top heels in the company. And I don't know. I mentioned before, I think on my podcast before Josh Nace's punch out, that MJF is kind of just felt like he's kind of going through the motions a little bit. And he got hurt. You know, he left after World's End. I think 2024 is kind of a lost year for him overall. He was doing, you know, filming movies and doing these things, but really he lost that swagger, that Adam Cole rivalry and the return and the feud. Boy, what a disaster that was. And I think both Adam Cole and MJF took huge hits from that. So he's had some rehab to do in a lot of ways. And he's coming along and we'll see what happens. I don't expect him to beat Hangman Page, but it's important to get him that title and get him in the mix at some point by, I think, the end of the year, or maybe not, you know, at some point within the next year, I think for sure. I think we'll probably see that. Makes a lot of sense for him to win at some point and then defend against Will Ospreay at next year's All In. I think that'd be good. Those two guys have had a rivalry in the past. Again, Okada versus Swerve, no notes given. That's going to be great. Hurt Syndicate defending against the winner of the tag team title tournament. Is it going to be Brodito or FTR? I think it's going to be Brodito. Adam Cole and Christian Cage, this is new. Them making their return for the first time since, I believe I wrote, I think it was 2011, or was it 2014? I think it's 2011. They last teamed together, the same year as Nigel McGuinness, his last matchup. Adam Cole and Christian Cage taking on Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian. This whole angle, I agree with the public sentiment, or at least some, that this thing just seems really compressed from All In to where we've come in about a month's time, where he had these two guys at odds and all of a sudden they are back together. Christian Cage is out of Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian's life. They are racing to get to All Out to have Copeland and Cage versus FTR. I think that's obviously the big match they want. And they're just kind of compressing all this stuff all together and stuff instead of telling a kind of a longer story. And Christian Cage, you know, with the visuals on Dynamite still seems a little bit weary. But we'll see how this plays out this week. But that should be a lot of fun. I was kind of hoping that first match back would be in Toronto, but you know, I think they're gonna love this, love these guys regardless. Tony Storm defending against Athena, again, no notes given. Mercedes Moné defending against Alex Windsor, Persephone, and then a representative from Stardom. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Nigel McGuinness. Kyle Fletcher defending against Hiromu Takahashi. So I was wrong there, because Hiroshi Tanahashi, who I thought would be taking on Kyle Fletcher, is going to be involved in a lights out steel cage match. Darby Allin, Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Kota Ibushi taking on the Death Riders of John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Gabe Kidd, and the Young Bucks. A lot of people returning from injuries and have been off for a while. Darby Allin, Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay, and Kota has been off for a little bit. And also Gabe Kidd has been hurt as well. So a very fascinating match there. Really looking forward to Forbidden Door coming up next Sunday, and looking forward to talking about more. We'll get into some Ring of Honor talk next. I've teased it enough. Ring of Honor, my thoughts on them, their future, and what I think they could be doing differently. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason coming right back after this. Wrestling Observer Live, Josh Nason back again. Hour two. Finally, let's get some things I think. I should really write this out and have a big sign above my laptop just to help me read that. Things I think I know I think, which I got that term from a longtime Boston Red Sox beat reporter, Sean McAdam. He does a column very similar to that. Actually, things I think I know, I think. I believe that's the term he uses as well. So I love that term. So shout out to Sean McAdam and traditional media. So how about that? So here's a things I think I know, I think. Ring of Honor is kind of a mess. It is. I don't know what the purpose of it is. I think wrestling in 2025, my soapbox thing, you know, that meme of the guy standing up being earnest and saying what he really thinks, right? It's like done Norman Rockwell style art. I think that Ring of Honor, I think that wrestling needs, every wrestling group needs a purpose in 2025 and beyond. I think it has been for a while. What's the reason you exist? What are you trying to accomplish? What's new? What's different? Why should people watch you? There's so many more choices in wrestling and in content in general today, TV shows, all this stuff. Wrestling alone, there's WWE, there's AEW at the top. WWE has, as we've talked about, you know, four and a half hours a week of Raw and SmackDown. Then you add on a PLE, you add on NXT, you add on NXT PLE. Now you have AAA, right? And you have a WWE Unreal, you know, other shoulder programming, those type of things. AEW, 4 hours, Dynamite and Collision, plus their pay-per-views. Then you have, obviously, TNA, 2 hours a week, plus their special events and then some pay-per-views. You have, what else? You have AAA, as I mentioned. You have CMLL, if you're interested in that. And then you also have, you know, the MLWs, and you have the NWAs and so on and so forth. Of course, you have Ring of Honor as well. What is the purpose of some of these groups? Some of them I really struggle with. NWA, I don't know why it exists at this point. I don't know what its purpose is, other than for Billy Corgan, who I love the Smashing Pumpkins, and it kills me to say that I just don't understand what the purpose of the NWA is. I love MLW, they put on a professional product. I just don't know what the point is, you know? I guess a holding pattern for people that can't get back into WWE are kind of this middle ground. And I think Court Bauer just likes running a wrestling promotion, and he's got the money to do it thanks to that lawsuit win or settlement or whatever. So I think he's happy. TNA, we've talked about them. We understand what they're all about. NXT, obviously part of WWE, and so on and so forth. You know, and then you mentioned like New Japan, right? We just got done with the G1. Kenosuke Takeshita winning the G1. But what is the purpose of Ring of Honor? NXT has a clear purpose that they're a third brand in a lot of sense, and also essentially developmental, as much as Triple H and other people don't want to say it's a developmental group. It is. You get there, you learn, you get in the system, and you get ready to be called up to the main roster at some point. That's the whole point. Ring of Honor should be developmental for AEW. We are now, well, almost 6 years in AEW. They do not have a training school per se. Like, they don't have their own performance center. They don't have their own developmental group. And I don't know why that is. I think that's kind of that year 10 type thinking of we want to get there. We want to start developing our own talent. Do they not want to do that? To me, that'd be a very interesting thing. Maybe they're kind of more seeing themselves as finishing school rather than to provide that opportunity for people that when you get there, you're essentially set with some tweaks and to a car, for example, like a Swerve Strickland who got there. Swerve Strickland is a hugely more bigger star name and talent than he was when he got there. Maybe that's kind of what they prefer, their version of developing guys. But then you have Ring of Honor, which airs on Thursdays, and you know, sometimes it's just a couple matches. And I look at this and I just see so much untapped potential. They have so many people that they have that are not active. You know, you talk about the Britt Bakers and you know, we talked in the past about the Ricky Starks and Miros and so on and so forth. Why couldn't you build up Ring of Honor so you're utilizing essentially all your active roster, but also some younger talents as well? And they're not even doing that. And the younger talents aren't even really getting that much run from time to time on here. And it feels like now Ring of Honor TV is just, it's like CMLL matches, a couple random pure wrestling matches, and like a Bandido versus Adam Priest match for the world title, which came out of nowhere. And Adam Priest has never won a match in Ring of Honor. Like that's like about it. I think this, and then so this week they had a show on Thursday, and then they randomly said, we're going to put up another special episode on Friday. Why? Why do we need more? This kind of gets to the whole point of what's the purpose? If you're just throwing stuff out there, that's what it feels like to the audience. You're just throwing stuff out there. Let me kind of go, I'll pull up kind of what this, the past lineups were. To me, like, I look at guys like, we talk about like Daniel Garcia, right? Daniel Garcia does not seem to have a purpose in AEW right now. He hasn't for a while. Why isn't he running shop in Ring of Honor and dominating and making that a must-see for AEW fans, just like NXT is a must-see for a lot of WWE fans? Lee Moriarty is a pure champion. He barely wrestles, and he hasn't really done a lot. I think they signed him. I think, I wouldn't say he's got worse, but I don't think he's improved at this point. There's no, like, no rub there, you know, just doesn't really just, it's just, he exists. And I think with some of these other younger, to me, like it should be younger talents or utilize a lot of the people that you don't use on the main roster and make it a true second brand. Now, do you not want to interfere with Collision or so on? Well, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like at some point you got to make a choice of what you want this to be. And right now it exists. So for the longest time until, you know, Nick Wayne went through this stretch where he was barely wrestling at all. And I almost wrote a column at that point, like he should be running Ring of Honor, you know? So I go through this, they did a special edition on Friday. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's 7 matches, 8. Oh God, this is a long card. More than that, geez. So we had Nick Wayne against Willie Mack. So ROH TV title match, I guess fine. You know, Air Fox and the Outrunners against Shane Taylor Promotions. All those people have been kind of running in place. Jay Lethal still exists, taking on Alex Zane with QT Marshall. They're trying to, I guess, build him up for a match with Paul Walter Hauser. Billy Starks, younger. Blake Christian, Lee Johnson, taking on Beef and Tom LaRuffa. Maria Shafir, they're finally, I guess, doing something with her. It looks like they're making a new trios with Adam Priest and the Workhorsemen. A Hechicero match, and then Masquerada and Neon taking on the Premier Athletes and defeating them. So I don't know. To me, it's like, it's just matches. And one of the reasons I think that as well is, you look at this Death Before Dishonor card. So this Death Before Dishonor card starts, I mean, that's like, what, less than 2 weeks? I think they have 3 matches announced at this point. Like, it's just not a lot at all. It just feels, again, because all the focus is on Forbidden Door, and you're going to do in the streaming special that, again, just it just feels thrown together. You have, what do we got? We have Bandido versus Hechicero on this. We have Athena versus Mina Shirakawa. And we also have Lee Moriarty defending against Zelawa. I may have pronounced his name from CMLL, but it's like, okay, it's just more wrestling. I don't think we just need more wrestling. So to me, things I think Ring of Honor needs a purpose, and I think they need to get one fairly quick. The other one I will give you before we get out of here for this segment, things I think I know, I think, is Big E. I don't think Big E's ever coming back, and he probably doesn't need to. Big E has been out for quite some time with neck injury at the hands of Duke Hudson, that belly-to-belly on the floor. And we all know what happened, obviously, the neck surgery and so on. He's, you know, fully functional. You know, he's around. He's doing stuff on WTV. He's being involved in these training seminars or these tryouts that they're doing with college athletes. Great ambassador for the company. Has a ton of charisma. And he's got the bona fides when it comes to college sports. I think at this point, I mean, he could come back. But I don't know. I assume that the data he's got back is kind of like, it's a risk. And at this point, why take that risk? Now, does he love the game that much where he just, you know, he needs to get back in? I don't know. But to me, if I'm him, like, if you're like, this could go well or could not. If there's that much of a risk, I just don't think he's coming back. And that's okay. WWE has, as I was watching the, it's very terrible, post show for SummerSlam, which is, I don't know, it's just rehearsed theater. It's awkward to watch. But he's not awkward to watch. And I think in the ESPN era, I think he has a chance to be a much bigger star, especially as like an analyst type. And I think that, to me, like, that's a pretty good life. Make good money, be part of these tryout sessions with college athletes. And again, you have the background. If you're him, a lot of risk to coming back. And I think if it's been this long, of course, I mean, look, people come back from concussions. Edge came back, Adam Copeland rather, you know, it's possible, but I don't know. I think at this point it feels like he's not coming back, and that's okay, and probably doesn't want like a big retirement ceremony. Of course, watch, you know, he's going to come back at like WrestleMania next year, and this whole thing will be for naught. But yeah, I think about Big E from time to time. I see him on the post shows. I'm like, this is perfect for him if he wants it, and I think he kind of does, and that's why I think he's not coming back. We'll come back after the break. We will talk about all kinds of other stuff, pay-per-view narratives, people struggle with technology, news of the week, that type of thing. Wrestling Observer Live, coming right back. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Neeson. It's Sunday, August 17th. No show next Sunday, Forbidden Door Sunday. The show is on the afternoon, and we have Brian and Vinny that night, I believe going live right after the show ends. And we also have Wrestling Observer Radio that night. So it is 99.9% positive, no Wrestling Observer Live next week. That might change, but I don't think it will. I also have a concert to go to that night, so I don't want to get divorced so quickly before the fall. So yeah, this is it didn't look like next week. However, I will be around. We'll do a 2-hour show to wrap things up the month of August, and then Andrew Zarian returns in September, so we still get another week ahead. So I was going to go through my notes here. I forgot to talk about this. Things I think I know, I think. Nick Khan, a couple weeks ago, This reared its head when he was doing the rounds, or at least did an interview with John Oran of Puck talking about the WWE ESPN deal. And he was reiterated his hatred of out-of-office notices and his hatred of people saying they're not available and also people saying they're tired, right? So his thing was out-of-office, like he doesn't allow out-of-office notices when it comes to his company. And what that means is you are worked in a business and you have an email address that if you're at the office, if you're on vacation or something like that, you turn this notice telling people, hey, I'm out, here's who to talk to, and so on and so forth. He doesn't like those. And he also doesn't like when people say they're tired, like, oh, how are you doing? Oh, yeah, I'm just so tired working so much and all this stuff. Like he's like, well, everyone's tired. I don't want to hear it. People don't want to hear that. And initially, both those really, they sound like, he sounds like a hard-o when he says it, right? He does. People that really love to brag about how much they work. Oh, that whole thing. And he's kind of talking about people that say they're tired, but it's kind of like, people that have to brag about how much they work or that they're so, they're in the grind. He strikes me as a type. He's super successful, but he strikes me as a type that when someone that at one point in his life had a sign that said like, embrace the grind. If you're an MMA fan, right? Something like that. It's a lot of, you know, motivational sayings up around his office back in the day and so on. It seems to have worked, but you know, but my take here is I understand what he's saying. I used to work in pro sports. I've said that before. I worked in pro sports for 6 or 7 years. I worked for a minor league hockey team, and it was one of the most successful minor league hockey teams of the 2000s. And early to, 2000, I started in 2001. Actually, I started in 2000, but the team I went to was really successful in New Hampshire, was top five, top three in attendance in the world for minor league teams for basically all 5 years that I was there. I'll take full credit for that. Why not? So I understand this mentality of always being available. And if you're in entertainment and you're in sports media and this thing that's just constantly moving, I can understand, you know, the president of the company not putting on an out-of-office message, or some of your top executives not putting on an out-of-office message, because you don't want to be that person of like, oh, I'd love to email them about this or talk about this. And they're like, oh, on a Sunday, I'm on vacation for a week. Get back to me after this. Because at that point, a deal could change. Nikon always wants him and his people to be available because business happens 24/7. It is easy for people like Nikon to say this because he makes a ton of money. He's done a lot of work to get there. And if he goes on a vacation, I'm sure his phone is attached to him. His family's used to it. I'm sure they're also having vacation from luxurious places that you and I will never get to, unless we're working at a place like this, right? Like I think White Lotus type stuff without all the murder. And it's okay. And it's kind of an arrangement that, you know, couples have and families have that, look, we get all this, but there's sometimes I'm going to have to do a little bit of work and it could be right in the middle of something. I may have to take a call. Work never stops. Work never sleeps for sports executives at that level. So I can understand why he says that. I'm curious. There has to be a story in which that happened to him and that has changed his way of thinking. So now in my profession, what I do in a full-time job, which isn't this, I have to put on out of office message because, one, I'm not a sports executive, and two, people actually rely on answers from me. If they can't get them, they need to go to somewhere else. I'm not going to help out with why someone can't connect to something on a vacation. There's other people that can handle that and do it quicker. And it's good they do that because delegation is also an important thing as well. So I hear him say those things and I'm always just so the I'm tired thing. He just doesn't like small talk. He likes to get right to the point on things. And I don't know. I learned a little bit about him a little bit, but he's also very guarded. And I don't know if I've ever seen him smile. I don't know if he's ever laughed in his life. We'll say, I think maybe once at the start of a podcast, but not really a true laugh, if that makes any sense. Other things are on my mind, things I know I think. Actually, this is something I don't know what I think about this. In the wake of the Hulk Hogan stuff, you know, him passing away and all the tributes and so on. And actually, Limitless Wrestling, I mentioned last week, got in the news. I was not at the show. But they're saying that, you know, Tony Atlas tried to remember Hulk Hogan. He essentially was booed out of the place. I don't know if that's accurate. The video, I still have not watched it back yet, but that's not the impression that I got. But and there's some pushback on that, but we'll see. How will Vince McMahon be remembered when he passes away? Vince making the rounds a little bit this week, or at least his images, a lot of images this week for him and Triple H and Stephanie on vacation, people being really mean and cruel about that. But Vince, they don't like the looks, and Vince looks very just, yeah, Vince these days, right? He appeared on the documentary, he's talking about, you know, Hogan and so on. But Vince, obviously, you know, he's going through the Janelle Grant lawsuit. There's the Ring Boy suit to a lesser extent in terms of newsworthiness, I think, to the mainstream. But how is he going to be remembered when he passed away? That's a really fascinating one, right? And is he going to be brought back to WWE once this Grant thing eventually is settled? Or if it is settled, which I think most people assume it is, are they going to run him right back on TV? He's going to get a nice round of applause. I think TKO has shown, as I mentioned last week, they're cancel-proof. And if this thing gets settled, like I think it does, and he is able to not get the brunt of, I'm not trying to say this. If he comes out of it, you know, able to say, oh, I wasn't guilty. You know, I thing didn't go to court and so on and so forth, or in a way that allows him wiggle room and allows TKO wiggle room. At one point, I'm like, there's no way they're going to bring him back. I still think that is pretty, pretty firm on that. I know some people think they are going to bring him back in some sort of role. The only way I can see TKO bring him back in an actual role is maybe a Saudi Arabia liaison or something along those lines. But in terms of bringing back in from the fans, I am now more convinced than ever that that definitely probably will happen if they're able to do it without getting a huge amount of backlash. Again, I mentioned they're cancel proof. There is an extent to that. But we'll see what happens. But how is he going to be remembered? I'm so fascinated by that. How is Vince McMahon going to be? I think very similar to like a Hulk Hogan. They're going to have these giant circles around things like the Janelle Grant lawsuit, the disgraced way that he left and so on. But there's going to be so much about all the things he brought to nostalgia-wise that gave us our childhoods and gave us this business. And in a lot of ways gave us business that we kind of know today. So I think that will be interesting to watch. But I had a note about that. How is Vince McMahon going to be remembered? Other things on the list I wanted to get to. People that struggle with buying pay-per-views or services. I, knock on wood, I have never had an issue where I have bought a pay-per-view and wasn't able to watch it. And I always wonder, people like, oh, like I heard Dave and Garrett talking about this on Wrestling Observer Radio on Sunday, or early Sunday, after UFC pay-per-view, and Dave saying he always has issues and so on. And then Garrett said he had issues as well. To me, if you know you're buying a pay-per-view, buy it earlier in the week. That's what I always did. I always know I buy my AEW stuff a week in advance. Same thing when I was buying UFC pay-per-views. If I knew a couple days before, I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm going to buy this now. One less point of entry, you know, when you're trying to log on to something or what have you. And then just set up beforehand. I think so many people wait till the last second. That's why they have so many issues. If you know you're buying it, just buy it early. Same thing with stuff on Triller, because a lot of people wait till the last second. I mean, it could be scheduling and all that, but some people are just like, oh, I'm just going to do it the last second. Well, don't. Or if you do, don't complain when there's issues. You're part of the problem. Just buy stuff early. Buy early, right? Buy early, buy often. Is that what they said? Yeah, I hear some of those comments, and I'm always kind of curious about that. All right, a few more things to wrap up this segment. John Cena, as I mentioned this quote, so he appeared at Fan Expo Chicago this weekend, and he was asked about, he's promoting the second season of Peacemaker, which I'm looking forward to. And he said he was asked about the reaction to his first heel promo. And he said that it bombed. Love this. He actually admitted it. He said, I wasn't upset. No, I failed. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You can learn from failure, right? I went up there and bombed. Bleep happens. I've changed a lot over the years. I'm not the same person I was yesterday. And John Cena is a walking inspirational quote calendar. He's recorded things for Nick Khan. Nick Khan just plays him in his office. Inspirational quotes. I believe John Cena is actually going to publish a book of his tweets, his inspirational tweets at some point. I don't know if he did. Part of that is I don't know if they're all originally his or not. So we'll have, I think that was going to happen. If it didn't happen already, I have to look that up. If not, let me know. If you actually own this book, that'd be great if it actually does exist. But yeah, it's as I talked about this last week, I'm trying to say there's not much of that interview, but this was definitely an admission of something that didn't work. I think the whole run was not great. The whole run bombed, and something I talked about on last week's show, in that it just didn't work, and it didn't work for a lot of reasons. A couple notes, I was re-listening last week's show. I didn't mention the drumstick ad that aired like before the first heel match at WrestleMania, and right before the match, it was a promo of him doing an ad for drumstick ice cream. And it's like, you certainly wasn't a heel. It's like that moment, I should have mentioned that last week. I had a note and didn't mention it. That's when I knew. That's when I knew this thing was not going to work at all, because he's just about to go out there as a heel and he did this incredible babyface promo. He's the voice of Honda. He is the voice of all these things. He does TV shows. And again, he's doing media for Peacemaker and so many other things and things involved with the Make-A-Wish stuff. This was never going to work. He was wearing the same gear. And it's funny, he wore like this, he talked about how much he hated the fans. He's doing this while wearing shirts and hats that rise above hate. But he hates the fans. That was the whole thing. And he still was wearing this. It was never going to work. And at least he admitted that first one bombed. He should have said that the whole run bombed, but it was not good. Any other notes? Let's see. For the week, after we come back in the break, we'll preview the week ahead. Oh, another Worlds Collide show. More wrestling coming your way for Saturday, September 12th in Las Vegas. That was announced last night, 10 p.m. So if you want to watch WWE SmackDown, you'll have the ability to watch Worlds Collide as well. And even more wrestling in your diet. We'll talk about more wrestling in the week ahead and, yeah, wraps things up. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason coming right back after this. Final segment of a 2-hour Wrestling Observer Live. Again, no show with yours truly, Josh Nason, next week. Forbidden Door, enjoy Brian and Vinny. Enjoy Wrestling Observer Radio. Get a subscription at WrestlingObserver.com or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Shows go generally right up after they do on the member website. Go up like right around the same time. Apple Podcasts, for whatever reason, takes forever to upload. I'd say that from personal experience, but yeah, on Spotify, Apple Pods, and our website, of course, everything goes right up. Thanks to people that checked in on VPNs. A couple of people saying they might need help. One person actually turned me on the fact that AEW Plus, you actually get the pay-per-views for $15. So big thanks for that. So that's a lot of good advice there. I'm going to check into that this week, of course, with Forbidden Door. Coming up on Sunday, so let's look at the week ahead. We have, of course, Raw coming up on Monday. We have NXT on Tuesday, AEW Dynamite, and also a taping for Collision coming up on Wednesday, that being from Glasgow, Scotland, so visiting a new city. That should be fun to see what the atmosphere is there. Love when, you know, groups go on the road, especially WWE. The crowds are lively, so hopefully that's the case there. Makes me a fun show. Ring of Honor for one of its, who knows, 3 billion shows coming up next week on Thursday, followed by TNA Impact, the follow-up from Emergence. Of course, we have SmackDown on Friday, Collision on Saturday, tape from Wednesday, and then, of course, AEW Forbidden Door next Sunday, and then NXT Heatwave. So we have a lot to get to, as always. Coming out next week, another busy week in the world of wrestling. And shout out to all the teachers getting ready for school. Hey, back. The kids are about ready to go to school, but the teachers are, well, shout out to you. Thank you for all you do. And thank you all for listening. This has been a great, fun 2-hour episode of Wrestling Observer Live. I have my voice. My name is Josh Nason. You follow me on Twitter, Josh Nason, JOSHNASON, also on Blue Sky as well. And then you can email me, josh@wrestlingobserver.com for anything you want. And that is it. I am all spent. I have nothing else to say. Thank you so much for joining me. My name is Josh Nason, and this has been Wrestling Observer Live. Hit the guitars!